everyone is a star child, made of stardust and the infinite potential of the universe. This extraordinary, fearless something in each of us clamors for freedom from the bonds of fear, conformity, and an ordinary life. Welcome to Dr. Durr's Living in the Sweet Spot, where practical tools and solutions from the intersection of mind-body medicine, science, and spiritual well-being awaken and empower you to live out your infinite potential, to live life in the sweet spot.
We've all heard that stress kills. And here in the United States, Western medicine is really good at acute care interventions, meaning if you get hurt or injured or suffer some kind of physical trauma, Western medicine is excellent at that. But beyond that, Western medicine really is a sick care system that treats symptoms, but not the causes. And so what that means is, when it comes to chronic illnesses, it's in other illnesses, it's really treating what I call the fruit and doesn't get at the root. And because it's not getting at the root of what's causing us to be ill, again, we have a lot of chronic illnesses that just, you know, go on and on. But there's also a number of autoimmune illnesses and unexplained illnesses that are occurring and that are going untreated. So joining me today is my special guest, Dr. Robin Tiger. And welcome, Dr. Robin.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you are more than welcome. And I have to say, I'm actually a bit little excited to have this conversation with you. Yes. because you're doing something kind of new, right? You are double board certified diagnostic radiology, but also lifestyle medicine. So that's the part that I'm talking about that's kind of new.
Yeah, it's a newer field of medicine, probably in the last decade or so. And it's a very exciting new field of medicine.
And I'm hoping from what I know about it, it's exciting because it addresses the very things that I talked about, right? Which is, instead of treating the symptoms, i.e. I called it the fruit, it's getting at the root causes of what's wrong with us in terms of illness. So let me share something about your background, which Dr. Robin Tiger is a lifestyle medicine physician. As I already mentioned, you're double board certified in diagnostic radiology and lifestyle medicine, and you are a physician well-being coach, a podcaster, a speaker, and a CME program creator. You are the founder of a physician wellness practice called Stress-Free MD, which you have a unique combination of medicine, yoga, therapy, meditation, and life coaching that you provide. And then you also have a book coming out in September, right?
Yeah.
Called Feeling Stressed is Optional. So I love that title because it reminds me of the truth of it, right? That whatever it is, but my response to it is my choice, and therefore it's optional.
Yeah. So powerful.
Absolutely. Powerful and empowering, right? So tell us a little something about how you got interested in lifestyle medicine.
Well, it really started a while ago on my journey. And I like to think about make your mess your message, really. And I consider myself a burnout thriver, proudly so, a burnout thriver physician, because many years ago, I had many symptoms and illnesses that my physician colleagues couldn't really figure out. And each one saw me with, I like to think of it as the horse that has the blinders on, right? Because that's what we're taught in medicine, to really see the individual as the symptom. And I was taking, I had a pill for an ill, right? So I was taking lots of medications. I was doing a lot of laboratory tests. I had a lot of imaging studies. Everything was normal, mm-hmm. and I wasn't getting better. And I had anything from migraine headaches to pain in my body to heartburn slash reflux to vertigo and tinnitus ringing in my ears. My gums were bleeding, and I had this really strange symptom of paresthesias, which is numbness and tingling in my hands mm-hmm. and my feet, which was terrifying. I thought that I had a neurologic disease, because what else would I think, right? And
well, you could have been taking Topamax.
I wasn't taking anything.
No, I know what I'm just saying, because you said you had migraine headaches. And so one of the treatments for migraine headaches is Topamax. And Topamax can cause numbness and tingling.
Oh, interesting. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I wasn't on that particular drug to explain that, but thank you for sharing that bit of information. The medications that I had been taking really wouldn't have explained that symptom away. Okay. And so a lot of body-based symptoms. I couldn't sleep. I was exhausted. I was very reactive. It was really, really difficult time. And I started to have really dark thoughts. Like after a while, I thought, oh, I don't think I could take another day like this. You know, I don't want to spend another day like this. And maybe it'd be easier if I wasn't here. It was that bad. And I had an amazing husband and two great kids and a job practicing as a physician. I was involved in my community. Everything on the outside looked amazing, right? But on the inside, I wasn't well. Mm-hmm. And no one in Western medicine could help me, right? Just like you said, they're really focusing on this disease management, right? The symptoms. Each one saw me as a different symptom. And so I decided to kind of take a look and say, well, what do I want to do? Mm-hmm. I had three physician friends die from suicide.
Wow.
I didn't want to be one of them. Yeah. And looking into the eyes of my children and my husband, I'm like, I got to figure this out. Mm-hmm. And so I was already exercising a lot. I was already eating what I thought was a very healthful dietary pattern. And I'm like, what else is there? Mm-hmm. And that's when I started to look outside traditional medicine and outside what I was already doing. And I'd heard about things like yoga and meditation to start, which I rolled my eyes. I thought they were like kind of ridiculous.
No, you did not do the eye roll.
I did the eye roll a lot, because I mean, some of you listening might be like, oh, those people wear a lot of spandex and they play weird music and they, you know, say weird things and put their bodies into strange positions that hurt. And I mean, I thought all the things, right? And so,
you know, so all that judgment and criticism, you know, that creates stress, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They're just piling on the stress some more with the thoughts. Uh-huh. Yeah. But I have to say that my doctor brain, my left brain, really appreciated that there was a course being given down the road from my home. And it was a yoga 101 class, and it was led by an anthropology professor at our local university. And so she seemed authentic and real, not like some weirdo person that my brain had created that would be doing this type of thing. And I we're laughing, and it is kind of funny when I think back on it. Although the truth is, I mean, I did walk in with like my tail between my legs and my head hanging low and not making eye contact, thinking this is ridiculous and a waste of my time. And it was anything but. And I remember the day clearly. I had read so many cases in radiology. I'd done so many procedures. I was really tired. I came home and I remember bathing my kids, feeding my kids, bathing my kids, hanging them to my husband, and getting to this evening class with like one eye open. And I was exhausted. I was stressed. I was anxious. I was rethinking and rethinking everything. And all of that disappeared after that very first session. I felt calm and clear, and I wasn't tired, and my body didn't hurt, and I didn't know what happened. It was just like this miraculous transformation. And it was the beginning of my understanding that whatever was wrong with me didn't need medications, it didn't need, you know, any procedures or additional type of therapy that I had been receiving. It needed something else. And when I put my head to it and started diving into the medical literature and looking through my textbooks, we had books back then, I came to understand that my symptoms were being caused by a whopping case of chronic stress. And that was the diagnosis. And once I started to learn some tools to help myself feel better, the symptoms started to disappear one by one, body and mind. And so once I started to feel better, what do we do as left brain individuals who are lifelong learners? We study what we learned. And so I decided to go into a yoga teacher training, never thinking I'm going to teach anybody anything, just because I wanted to dive in and understand more. And it was there that I learned about yoga therapy, which is a more advanced training over a 3-year period that allowed me to dive deeper into the tools that I was learning and apply them to help individuals with many different types of symptoms and illnesses and diseases. And so I got deep into yoga therapy, and from there I learned about meditation. And when I found that helpful, I went on to study meditation and did another 3-year certification in a very specific type of meditation called iREST, which was created initially for Walter Reed for our military to help with PTSD. And then I added that to what I was able to educate others in. And then I realized there was so much body-based work that I became an expert in, but then there were thoughts. And being helped by life coaching, I went further and got certified as a life coach so that I could understand how to help others work with their thoughts, putting body-based and mindset tools together. How I got into lifestyle medicine was that being in this stress management, stress expert area, I came upon an individual in my area in Asheville, North Carolina, who is a cardiologist and who was very aligned with what I was doing. And he said, the American College of Lifestyle Medicine needs to know about you. And I said, what is that? And so that was my understanding of this field that was all about everything that I was about, and it was an actual specialty of medicine. So he connected me to education, and the education department really was very warm and excited to meet me and said that we're very weak in our education on stress, and we would love for you to join our faculty and come on board and help create our next board review manual materials. Mm. And so that was my introduction to lifestyle medicine, and they asked me to study for the boards, which I also did and became certified. Yeah. And that's how it happened. And so I added additional education in stress management, in nutrition, in exercise, in sleep, in connection, in avoidance of risky substances, and nature as medicine to what I was already educating others on and benefiting myself as well.
So, you know, the thing that I think that's important to acknowledge, because you've mentioned it, is just how many physicians struggle with and suffer from depression and burnout. And I frankly have had, you know, my bouts of depression. I think some of it stemming from the childhood trauma that I experienced. And so I've had, like, you know, intermittent bouts of depression, but then also, you know, being a single mom with an 11-month-old when I started medical school. And then initially I went into a triple board program, which means, you know, I was eligible for training in pediatrics, adult psych, and in child psychiatry. And those first 9 months was just horrible, frankly, for me. Again, I'm a single parent on call every fourth night, you know, working 80 hours a week with a six, then she turned 7 years old. And just at times I would be on the floor and just break out crying in terms of when I was doing peds. And so I was like, you know what, I need to make a change here. And I switched to psychiatry, to, you know, general psychiatry, then child psychiatry. But I also remember having times where actually, and this wasn't when I was in training, this was afterwards. And actually, I remember after having my second child, and I would, you know, time to have the thoughts was, again, you know, just this, like this dark tunnel, and, you know, can't see any light. And I would think to myself, well, at least at least it means a freight train's not coming, right? but the thing about that too, again, just kind of thinking, you know, really thinking, you know, well, sometimes it would be just nice not to wake up. And, you know, that's really passive suicidal thoughts. Fortunately, I never, you know, acted on it because I knew what was going on with me. But it's just, it's far more common than people realize. Also, you mentioned, you know, losing a couple friends. Again, there's an increased rise in suicide amongst physicians. I certainly have had experienced burnout a few years ago. I actually took a year off, a planned year off, because I was like, I'm burnt. I need a break. And I took a year off. And it's so, and also the suicide is increasing amongst women physicians. So that burnout and suicide, but in addition, you're experiencing that just amongst the general, you know, population as well. So it's far more common than I think people realize in terms of that level, that severity. And so, you know, I'm really happy that we're having this conversation about it today.
Yeah. And thank you for sharing your story as well. And for everyone listening, we just want to normalize this, that it doesn't mean it's okay. But if you're feeling any ways that we're describing, you're not alone.
Correct. Correct. And that one, help is available if you're willing to seek it, right? There is the suicide crisis line. The national number is 988. You know, if you need some help, you can call, you can text. And I'm just trying to remember if there's another option you have, but I know that you can call, and I know that you can text the 988 number, which is the National Suicide Crisis number. So it's so I think the work that you're doing is really important. And you already mentioned some of the pillars, right, that you use in your approach. But I tell you what, let's take a break, and when we come back, then let's get into those seven pillars. Heaven Abounds in You takes you on an inward journey of discovery that dramatically transforms your outward experience of life. Discover the power of belief. Utilize it in connection with science to create a vision of meaning and purpose that pulls you forward. Let go of the meager me to discover the magnificent me. Let go of your painful past and live life free from fear, worry, and stagnation. Experience an abundant universe as you powerfully create happiness, relationships, health, and limitless opportunities. When you heal your mind, all things are possible. Before the break, we were going to get into what are the seven pillars of lifestyle medicine and how they can help you have great health and stress relief.
Yes. So, you know, many people, because it's a newer specialty field, may not even know what it is. So lifestyle medicine is a very new, exciting field of medicine. And as we talked earlier, traditional Western medicine is more of a disease management system where someone comes in with a symptom and that's where the focus is. And you may receive medication or a procedure or some type of therapy. The question is,
or a side eye, right?
Or a side eye.
or a side eye, because we don't think what you're presenting with is legit.
Right. That could be true as well.
Mm-hmm.
And which only makes more stress when someone doesn't believe you.
Uh-huh.
But what if, as you talked about earlier, we got to the root cause of what's going on? So if you come in with back pain, why does your back hurt? If you come in not sleeping and tired, why are you exhausted? If you have diabetes type 2, which is completely preventable, why are your sugars elevated? If your blood pressure is high, why is your blood pressure up? And so on. And mm-hmm. So in lifestyle medicine, we look more for the root cause to try and figure out what's causing what's going on so we can actually turn that off, crank it down, and get you feeling better. And
well, you know what, Doc, you know, the conversation with you about being in lifestyle medicine, and I'm going, then what the heck are we doing in medicine that we've got, quote unquote, two specialties that are designed to get at the root cause of illness? So what's the rest of everybody else doing?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping they're going to learn what I've learned, because there are only a few thousand of us in the country and there are a million physicians. So lots of education needs to happen. And it seems like it's common sense, but you only know what you know and you don't know what you don't know. And so, we weren't correct. Trained.
Although that's very much my approach when I say that, in terms of, you know, getting at the root cause. Because one of the things I do a lot of nutrition based education and treatment for mental illness and for brain health, in addition to, like you said, you know, the exercise and the meditation and some other things. So, and when I was prescribing vitamin D at one point, the practice I was in, I was prescribing way more even than the primary care people were. So I'm on board with you, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear that. It's so, so important to look at the opposite end of the spectrum. And what we know is that 80% of healthcare costs in this country are for chronic diseases. And 80% of chronic diseases are secondary to our behaviors, our lifestyle behavior choices, which is huge. And so when you recognize that you have the power to determine your own health, your health span, how healthy you are, as well as your lifespan, how long you live based upon your behavior choices.
Right. But I also think, though, it's important that while we, again, talk about that people have the power to make choices, because that is a very important aspect of it, that we want people to feel empowered and know that you are making choices that either contribute to health or contribute to illness. It's also important to acknowledge that sometimes those choices that they have are limited. So if you live in a community that's a food desert, then you're and you don't have transportation to get really far outside of that community, then your choices for good healthy foods are very limited. And even in the context where you have choices, there's so much of our food. It's well over 60%, maybe 69% or something like that, of the food in our stores is actually considered non-food, meaning they provide calories, but they don't really provide much nutrition.
Yeah, I believe that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is one pillar of lifestyle medicine, which is nutrition, healthful nutrition, eating as many plants as you can in their whole form, not processed. You know, fruits, vegetables, grains, beans, legumes, seeds, and nuts. And stress management, keeping your stress level down is another one. You mentioned exercise. Really
quickly, when you say in terms of whole food, does that mean raw vegetables or what does that mean when you say whole?
Whole means that they haven't been broken down and mixed with chemicals, for example. So an apple mm-hmm. is its wholest form. Mm-hmm. Then you have applesauce
right.
when you mush the apple. And then maybe from applesauce, you are creating apple candy. And then from apple candy, maybe you're making like a spice or something, right? And so there are the best way to eat the apple is in its whole form. Doesn't mean you can't cook it. Mm-hmm. But as we go on along the stream, you know, we've got the whole apple and then we've got the gummy bear, you know, and so, you know, we want to eat the apple in its wholest form without chemicals, without added sugar, without saturated fat, without trans fats, without all of these things that are really, really bad for our bodies and hurt us and cause illness. Mm-hmm. So we try and eat as much as possible foods in their wholest form, and they don't have to be raw. They can be cooked, but just without added ingredients to make it unhealthy to cause symptoms, illnesses, and diseases.
Okay. Sugar.
Added sugar. Sugar of the apple is good sugar, right? The sugars that are naturally in fruits are good for you. Yeah. It's the added sugars that we are watching and being careful of. And sugars added in so many things that we don't think about. Mm-hmm. So eating foods in their wholest forms, eating as many different colors, eating the rainbow, getting lots of phytonutrients is a big word, which means lots of amazing nutrients in these plants with lots of colors. Really, really good for your health and well-being. So we talked about stress management. And we talked about nutrition and moving our bodies, exercising, watching your sleep, you know, making sure you're getting nourishing sleep. Sleep is medicine.
So and hold on before you, so because you know what, these pillars are really important. Mm-hmm. So I just want to dig into them a little bit. So when you're saying exercise, so how much exercise and what type of exercise are we talking about?
Yes. Yeah, so the standard is recommended that we get 150 minutes of moderate intensity or 75 minutes of vigorous exercise per week. And so you may be like, well, what's this intensity thing? So with intensity, it's really the toxing test. So mild intensity is you can talk and sing. Maybe you're just taking a walk, right? Moderate intensity is you can talk, but you can't sing. And vigorous intensity is you can't talk or sing. So the recommendation is 150 minutes per week. That's 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, for example, of moderate intensity exercise or 75 minutes of vigorous. So that is the aerobic or cardiovascular recommendation. And then we need at least 2 days of strength training per week to strengthen your muscles and your bones, and 2 days of balance and flexibility. And those are the important components of our movement to make sure that we're keeping our whole body as healthy as possible with respect to our fitness.
Right. And the reason why it's important to include strength training is because we start to lose 1% of muscle mass a year, beginning at what age? Do you remember?
I don't know what age. I know women in menopause lose 40% of their muscle mass. So,
okay,
but I
okay.
don't remember exactly okay. when it starts to go down, but it does 30s, 40s. I would have to look that up. But
yeah.
But your point is well taken that we lose muscle mass as we age. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why, and I try to encourage people, that's why you need to do the strength training. And the strength training can be weights, but the strength training can also be resistance bands, mm-hmm. right? And I tell people, you know, we're not asking you to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger or the female equivalent. We just build some muscle and some balance so that you don't fall and break bones. And, you know, especially the older you get, that can be potentially not only harmful, but deadly. So, and then you said aerobic and Actually, you know what? I had a guest on last week, Dr. Michael Hosking, and he combines mindfulness with cycling. And so I thought you might find that an interesting combination.
Yeah.
Especially because you include things like meditation mm-hmm. and mindfulness and things in there. So any other exercises that you really like other than yoga, which I really like yoga too. And you mentioned flexibility. Any other particular mm-hmm. exercises that you like?
So yoga is a type of movement, but I put that more in the category of stress management and prevention because it doesn't fulfill the cardiovascular component of exercise. It does help with flexibility. So it does overlap in the flexibility and balance portions of our exercise, but we want to also remember that's a really key tool for our stress management.
I'm just really trying to communicate that yoga, like all things, there is a range and a variety. So depending upon what you're looking for, you can find the relaxation, but you can also find, you know, you can also find the strength. You can also find, you know, the exercises that also, you know, focus on the abs, right? Strengthening your abs. So it's just a different way to kind of reach the same destination. So I don't want to scare anybody off of yoga either.
Because people are like, no, no.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. So you say after yoga, and then were you going to mention the other exercises or we're going to get into sleep?
Well, I really just want to emphasize it's what you love, you know, mm-hmm. finding something that you really enjoy. People ask me all the time, what's your routine? What do you do? You know, and I don't mind sharing, but it doesn't mean that it's one size fits all. And it really needs to be what you enjoy. And the more important component is really understanding that it's a recipe. It's cardiovascular, keeping your heart strong. It's keeping your bones and muscles strong. It's keeping your body flexible and making sure that you're working on your balance. So it's really understanding these pieces, these recipe components, and then finding in that recipe what you enjoy, because you won't do it if you don't enjoy it. So I usually encourage really that.
Have fun with it.
Yeah, have fun. Yeah, like if you like Zumba, you know, if you're someone who likes to dance, as long as you are doing the talk-sing test where you're getting at least your 150 minutes of talking and not singing at that moderate intensity level, then you're good.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
And then, of course, the favorite, sleep. We're going to talk about sleep.
Yeah. Sleep is medicine. And as we were talking before we came on together, I was sharing that, you know, this is something I've really been prioritizing this year. It was one of my 2024 intentions for myself. And it's that I'm just noticing that I'm my body and mind are wanting some more sleep than they have in the past as I'm transitioning into this different stage of life and honoring that. And sleep really is medicine, and amazing things happen when we sleep. I mean, so many incredible regenerative things happen, and our memories are encoded, and our hormones are balanced, our glucose is balanced. And I mean, there's so many incredible things. We could do a whole conversation just on sleep. Mm-hmm. And when we don't sleep, wow, we can't remember things and we lose focus and concentration. It becomes something that draws more anxiety and stress, and it causes lots of illness. Lots of illnesses, the chronic diseases and cancer and so on, are associated with not sleeping. And so really been prioritizing sleep, not only for my clients, but for myself as well. And people say, well, how much sleep do you need? And it really is, well, how much sleep do you get where you wake up in the morning and you're like, yeah, like I'm ready for today, you know? And at 3 o'clock, you're not saying, oh my gosh, I need all this caffeine, right? So we don't want that. We want you to feel really good all day. And so that magic number is going to come from really how you feel. I mean, research does have certain numbers, 7 to 9 hours, blah, blah, blah. But I just really think it matters how you feel, which is most important. Right. If you're counting the minutes so you can go back to sleep when you wake up, then you didn't get enough sleep.
not getting enough sleep dysregulates that. We feel bad. We feel tired. So then also then I want to eat something to give me some energy or just to soothe me, make me feel better. Because we know carbs and sugar, it hits that brain. And I can feel it myself. It hits my brain. I go, ah, right? So that, of course, is going to interfere with weight loss.
Yeah. And that growling, or think of like, when your stomach growls, right? That's how I remember it. It means that you're hungry. You're right. The hormones are not regulated well. And when you don't get enough sleep and your ghrelin level is not where it needs to be and your leptin level is not where it needs to be, you actually eat as much as 300 more calories the next day, which is a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I always love the science and the numbers behind things, because then it kind of gives me a specific kind of objective framework to go, okay, now I know what I'm working with, right? So
yeah,
300
yeah.
a day. Okay. And 300 yeah. a day, if it's every day, because you're not getting enough sleep, that ends up being a lot of calories per week.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And okay. it's really, we need that leptin, which is the satiety or I'm no longer hungry hormone. And that really doesn't become at the level that it needs to be when we don't sleep. And that combined with cortisol, the stress hormone that's elevated when we don't sleep. And that's causing us to crave, as you mentioned, the sugary carbs, the fried foods and so on. And it's just this vicious cycle. So sleep actually affects your hunger and the food choice that you make and how much you eat, which is something that, you know, I never knew years ago. And, mm-hmm. and it's so, so important.
All right. So, and what are those remaining pillars?
So far we talked about, to recap, stress management. We talked about nutrition. We talked about exercise/movement, and we talked about sleep. And so social connection is another one. And mm-hmm. social connection is something that is the second pillar that I've really prioritized this year for myself, because it's something that we put on the back burner. We're like, oh, I got work to do. I'm not going to go do anything. I'm not going to go out. I don't need to see people, right? I'm too tired. And the truth is that humans need humans, and that research shows that social connection is really important for our health and well-being. And Harvard research actually says it's the number one thing that helps us be healthy in our own Surgeon General. Dr. Vivek Murthy actually addressed that earlier this year, really calling awareness to the loneliness and isolation epidemic that we have in the country and actually in the world that just escalated during COVID. And so we really
last year he said that the loneliness epidemic is a in quote pressing global health threat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, as a radiologist, I appreciate the research when the brain is imaged, mm-hmm. and we have what's called functional MRI imaging, where we understand what parts of the brain are functioning during certain times, during certain feelings and emotions. And what they found is that when individuals are isolated and feeling lonely, the same part of the brain is functioning as the sensation of pain in the body. Ooh. And that's why isolation and loneliness is actually painful. The same part of our brain is being utilized as if we're feeling pain in our body. And that to me was like a big aha moment. And that's why it's so painful. And that's why it's, you know, it's so important that we, you know, we address that. And so picking up the phone, texting, calling, making time to meet with friends and family, getting out there and volunteering in something that brings you joy, meeting new people, really prioritizing social connection is so, so important. So that's the next pillar. Mm-hmm. And then we talk about risky substances, which I like to group under the umbrella of escapes. And those are all those things that you do to not feel the thing you don't want to feel, to not have the emotion that you don't want to have, right? And so that could be risky substances such as overdrinking, utilizing recreational drugs, smoking cigarettes. It could be overeating. It could be overexercising. It could be over shopping, over scrolling on social media. And there are lots of things that you do to not.
Plastic surgery.
Plastic surgery, right? Yeah, plastic surgery could be one. I have a client who is over gardening, right? You know, like over needle pointing. I mean, whatever it is, it's like, I don't want to feel that horrible emotion. I don't want to deal with it. So I'm going to do this other thing instead, over organizing your house. I mean, you name it. You can start to think about what are the things that you do that are not really healthy. And it might seem like it's a healthy thing, but when you do too much of it, it becomes unhealthy. And it could be something like risky substances as well. So we focus on being aware.
We just call sugar a risky substance.
Well, added sugar is, right? So yes, fruit is okay, but we don't want to eat too much. But what I'm saying is that, you know, under the true pillars of lifestyle medicine, we say avoiding risky substances, but I like to loop in escapes because not everybody is using risky substances, but they're doing other things that are risky when right. they're done too much of. So really getting to know yourself and seeing, you know, where you fall into that category.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And too much marijuana, cocaine, heroin, all of that stuff.
Over drinking if you're coming home and having several drinks because you just don't want to feel whatever's going on. You know, if you're reaching for, you know, drugs, if you're smoking, or if you're doing other things, right? Mm-hmm. Other things, again, to avoid really allowing yourself to feel what's going on and to addressing the emotions that you're having. So those are the six key pillars of lifestyle medicine. And then I like to add in one unofficial pillar, which is nature. And my dear friend and colleague, Dr. Melissa Sunderman, who I lead coaching programs and retreats with, she is known as Dr. Outdoors. And we focus on nature as medicine because we actually understand that being outside is so, so good for us. It decreases our stress and anxiety, it decreases stress hormone cortisol, it elevates our immune response so that our immune system can function better. It decreases depression. It helps us with our mind, focus, and concentration. And so really making sure that we're getting outside. I think like over 90% of the time we are indoors. And so we want to make sure we get outside and soak in all of that really good nature.
Being outdoors in nature, it increases one of the other pillars you talked about, which is connection. Mm-hmm. Because even if there's not another person around, mm-hmm. we're actually connecting to the life force that mm-hmm. animates everything, including mm-hmm. what's in nature, right? The trees mm-hmm. and the grass and the flowers, you know, and the mushrooms and the birds and whatever other life forms are there. So we get out of our heads and then connect to the life force that animates all life. And so that, and then also includes increasing my connection to self. Mm-hmm. And then of course, if you're walking around your community, right, then you see the neighbors, hey, how you doing? How's the kids? You know, see y'all with the dog. Oh, we got a new such and such graduated. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so true. Yeah. And, you know, the Hippocrates has said, if you're in a bad mood, go for a walk. And if you're still in a mad mood, go for another walk. And so, you know, so getting outside.
All right, then. So I tell you what, we're going to go ahead and take another break. And then when we come back, we're going to get into some things that we could do differently and how our thoughts actually influence our stress as well.
Abounds in you, enlightens, uplifts, inspires, and invites you to live a life that's engaged, joyous, and limitless, the sweet spot of life. Take this journey in oneness. We are and have all that God, the infinite creative source of the universe, is. You are infinite potentiality, and the kingdom of heaven is within you. Heaven abounds in you.
I'm Dr. Balin A. Durr, and joining me today is my guest, Dr. Robin Tiger, and we're talking about lifestyle medicine It's 7 ways to great health and stress relief. So before the break, we said we were going to get into, I want to ask you the question in terms of how do our thoughts actually create pain? Because you kind of alluded to that when you mentioned about what area of the brain gets triggered when we're feeling isolated. So how do our thoughts create pain?
Yeah. So first of all, you might say, what is a thought? Right? It's the thought or the words our brain tells us, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have about 60,000 thoughts per day. Most of them are not so nice. And many of them are...
The National Science Foundation says that 95% of our thoughts are repetitive. 80% of our thoughts are negative.
There you have it, right? They're on repeat. and they're terrible. So that's not very many thoughts that are actually patting you on the back. They're just beating you up all day. And they're anything from, you know, I am this, I am that, right? I'm not smart enough. I'm not good enough. That person's better than me. That person's prettier than me. That person has more than me. I shouldn't have done this. I should have done that. What if I did it differently?
My thighs, my money, my hair, all kind of stuff.
Yes, all day long. Mm-hmm. And you're having this internal dialogue. Do you ever notice that you're actually answering yourself when you're saying something and then you're answering yourself and back and forth? And so.
And just as long as you don't do it out loud, you're okay.
Yeah. But if someone else heard you, maybe it would help because you'd realize somebody could really call you out on it and be your mirror. But the truth is that those thoughts are incredibly stressful. And when we have stressful thoughts, our brain doesn't know the difference between a real thought and something your brain's just telling you. It could be real or imaginary, but your body reacts the same way. So the stress response, which is the part of your brain that sets off it's called autonomic. I like to think of it as automatic nervous system has the stress and relaxation response. The stress response gets turned up, way up. And lots of things that happen when you're feeling that stress response is if you're getting ready to run away from that wild animal. But the truth is there's no wild animal. It's just something your brain's telling you, some of those not so nice thoughts. The same things happen in your body as if you needed to run away from that animal. And things like tension, right? Your shoulders come up, you get hunched a little bit, right? You're ready, your legs engage, everything's engaged, right? But you're not actually running away from anything, but you think you are, right? So your body tenses up and everything hurts, right? And your heart beats, you get palpitations, you might feel sweaty, your body can feel hot, you might start to sense some reflux, right? Some of that heartburn might occur. What are the things? Think about it. When you are feeling stressed, that happen in your body, so many things. And it becomes a cascade of events where then that just turns into you not feeling well, right? Not sleeping well. Your immune system doesn't work right. Your digestive system doesn't work right. You might have diarrhea or constipation. You might start to feel low self-esteem, depressed, have mood swings, be really reactive, wishing you could take away some things you were saying, wishing you could reverse some things that you do, right? And so our thoughts actually determine how we feel, our emotions, how we show up, and the results that we create. But ultimately, these thoughts, which are stressful, are then creating stress in our body, and that shows up in many different ways.
So it shows up as pain. It shows up as, there's a saying that emotional dis-ease over time becomes physical disease because of the chemicals and the hormones that are being released and act upon the body, consistently and chronically over time. So that's why that happens. So, you know, we've in this last minute or so, if you could tell us just, I know you kind of have a bottom up, bottom to top approach, and then also how people can, you know, can get in touch with you, because it's that, that approach is connected to, again, the thoughts that we think in terms of how we're going to get well. So your bottom to top approach, if I'm saying it correctly.
Yeah. So what I understood, and it's really that journey that I described early on about the tools that I learned, and even in the order in which I learned them to feel better, is that we can't think a thought and feel a feeling in our body at the same time. Mm-hmm. We can't think a thought and feel a feeling in our body at the same time, which works to our advantage. So when we're having those 60,000 thoughts, not so nice, storming around our brain, it's really hard to work with any of them and to get a handle on what's going on. So when your heart's palpitating, when you're feeling hot and stressed and tight and anxious and sweaty, we need to get all of that under wrap first before we can work with our thoughts. And so bottom up means getting the nervous system balanced, or what we say in homeostasis, which means our stress and our relaxation responses are friends and they're working together and they are balanced. We don't have all of this excess stress response happening and all of these extra stress hormones floating around. So first, bottom up means let's work with tools to feel calm and balanced in our body. And then we can do our mindset work, our life coaching, our top down tools to figure out what's going on with our thoughts and to change the ultimate results that we create with our thoughts in our life.
Yeah. And I've heard you say before too, that without the body being calm, then it's difficult to do the work up here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, think about it. When you're really angry about something and you're just steaming and you're tense and you're just, right? When you're like in that wigging out stage, how can you possibly pay attention to anything your brain is offering you so much, right? And so our brain is not clear. It's mindful, two words, mm-hmm. not mindful. And when it gets to the point where we can be mindful, one word, and really, really understand what's going on. But first, we need to feel calm in our bodies to create that space in our mind. Then we can start to actually work with our thoughts. And so it really helps to really work from our body first. Mm-hmm. To allow us to then address our thoughts and our mind.
Okay. And then how can people get in contact with you?
Yes. So on my website, stressfreemd.net, you'll find lots of information about me. My podcast, the Stress Free MD podcast, is there. You'll find information about my online programs on demand, my retreat that's coming up in Africa in January, and free videos. So you might be like, well, how do I even start to feel calmer? I've got 4 very short, 5 minutes each videos of 4 different stress relief tools ready to be dumped right into your inbox. So you go on there and look where it says feel calm now and click there and I'll send them to you. And if you want to chat, if you want to set up a free chat and learn about the different things I offer and what would work best for you, I'm happy to chat with you. I have also a book. As you mentioned, my book should be coming out this fall. So wait and check out that. I'm very excited about it.
And the title again?
Feeling stressed is optional. Feeling stressed is optional. So stress happens in our life, but we don't have to feel stressed about it. And it's really about understanding all of the tools to relieve your stress. And each section goes through lifestyle medicine. So what foods can we eat to feel less stressed? How can we move our bodies? How can we sleep better? How can we connect better? How can we avoid escapes and so on? So I'll take you through all of that in the book. And I'm on social, right? So if you're a social media person, hit me up. I'm happy to meet with you, chat with you, and answer any questions that you have there. And if you're a healthcare professional, there's CME for my offerings as well.
So Dr. Robin Tiger, it really has been a pleasure having you on and having this discussion today. Such wonderful information. And of course, feel free to come back, and especially we can continue the conversation, but also especially, around the time your book is going to be released. So, and we can get into that to some more. So thank you again.
Thank you. It's really been my honor to be here.
Mine as well. I am your host, Dr. Valen A. Durr, awakening and empowering you to live out your infinite potential, to live life in a sweet spot. I'll see you next time. Thank you for joining us today in the sweet spot. Share, follow, and like us on social media. To learn more, please visit valinadurmd.com, spelled valinadurrmd.com. Join us next week, and remember, when you heal your mind, all things are possible.